and welcome to the second episode of the F&M Roundup. My name is Ryan, and I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
So this week, this weekend actually is game day, so we're both pretty excited about this. So this week on the show, we're going to go through the decks that we're going to be playing at game day. We're going to go pretty deep into the decks.
We're going to delve deeply
into the decks and talk about them. And then after game day is finished, we're going to go back and do kind of a recap or a roundup, if you will, on the decks and see how they did. So let's just talk about game day as an event for a couple seconds here. So we live in a small town. Game day is a big tournament for us. Like, we don't get to go to those. You know, it's really far for us to drive to get to any kind of, like, you know, Star City tournament or, you know, Grand Prix or anything like that. So I really, really look forward to game day. And we've been doing quite well at them recently. I started playing right when, like, Born of the Gods game day happened. And you won that one, right?
Yep, I won one of the game day tournaments because there are multiple ones in the weekend.
So, but you ended up with the playmat.
Yeah.
And then we went to Journeying to Nyx and I ended up with the playmat. I won that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you won M15.
Yep.
And then I won Cons.
Yes.
So we're hoping to both get a mat this weekend. We're going to be playing in three different tournaments. We're going to be switching back and forth with the decks that we've built. So we're both going to play them. So yeah, let's jump into our first deck here. Okay, so we're here to talk about the red and white aggressive deck. Well, splashing black. I guess it's Mardu. But you've got the cards, so why don't you start saying what the cards do, and we can get into it.
So the first section is going to be threats. These aren't necessarily all creatures, but they are things that are going to win the game for you. And on the low end of that, we have a 4 of Seeker of the Way.
Okay.
Then we have a 4 of Goblin Rabble Master. Then we have a 4 of Hordling Outburst. Then we have a 2 of Ashcloud Phoenix. A 2 of Stormbreath Dragon. 1 of Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker. A 2 of Wingmate Rock. And these last three cards are things that are going to win in other ways than combat damage.
Yeah.
That we have a 1 of Perforos, God of the Forge.
Spicy.
Yeah, he's a sneaky little card. And then we have a 1 of Outpost Siege. And this is one of the new cards, and it reads, as Outpost Siege enters the battlefield, choose Cons or Dragons. Cons, at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card. Dragons, whenever a creature you control leaves the battlefield, Outpost Siege deals 1 damage to target creature or player.
90% you're choosing Cons.
Oh, right? Like 99.
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
It's Chandra's zero ability.
It's Chandra's zero ability that's hard to answer.
Exactly.
And that's... Speaking of Chandra's zero ability, Chandra Pyromaster is a 1 of.
Yeah. And that we want that to be an Outpost Siege, right?
We're hedging on it.
We need to pick one up on the way to game day if we're going to play it over Chandra, because we only have 1 Outpost Siege at the moment, but
Chandra does has more plus stuff. One abilities. She's easier to answer, though.
Yeah, she dies easier. But anyway,
so then for our removal package, and this is not just removal, because we have things like our burn spells, where obviously heavy and
it's
red
removal and burn.
Yeah, so you have the option with the burn to either direct
like
it at
modal
creatures.
Cards, really,
yeah. It's super dynamic. So to start, we have a 3 of Lightning Strike.
Awesome.
We have a 4 of Crackling Doom,
which is the only black card, right?
The only thing that the blacks are, that we're using the black for, which it means our mana base is really, really light on black, and it lets us be really consistent without having too much pain land.
Let's finish the deck before we start getting into it, because I know we're starting to stray a little. So
then we have 4 Chained to the Rocks.
Yep.
And 3 Stoke the Flames.
Sweet. So We both love this deck. What do you want to talk about first?
What do I want to talk about first? I think I want to talk about Seeker of the Way
first. Yeah, totally.
This card...
Let's move on up the curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This card is just absolutely overwhelming. You have about half the deck, which triggers the prowess.
Mm-hmm.
What I find to be spectacular about this card is when your opponent is in any situation where they're trying to block Seeker of the Way, you will be able to blow up their blocker and swing through for three lifelink.
Yes.
And a 3-3 lifelink for two mana is a huge deal.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing at the two mana slot that is going to make a big difference between you and your opponent's lives.
Six life swing. That's huge.
It makes such a big deal when your opponent has a really, really overwhelming board state and swings through, leaving back blockers, because you can blow up the blockers and swing with Seeker of the Way, which has lifelink.
Yeah. And I want to point out, like, I called this an aggro deck, but it's a tempo deck.
It's a very tempo deck, really, really describes it the best way.
Because what's the dream curve? Like, turn two Seeker is your first play, right?
Turn two Seeker is always your first play.
Hopefully. And, that's the dream.
You know, and it depends what your opponent does for your turn three play. Your Rabble Masters are really nice. You also have Hoarding Outburst, which, of course, triggers Seeker the way, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so you turn two Seeker, and then turn three, you play Hoarding Outburst before combat, and you swing with a 3-3 lifelink.
Yeah.
And you have three tokens sitting back.
And we also have the Goblin Rabble Masters, which work really similarly to the Seeker of the Way, where when you resolve the Goblin Rabble Master, if your opponent is trying to attack you and hold back blockers, when you can blow up the blockers with the fairly large removal package that we have, and you swing back with the Goblin Rabble Master
for a ton of damage.
I believe the first untap, he swings for six if his token survived.
Yep.
And you know, that's really, really overwhelming. That's from a three drop. Swing for six from a three drop is bigger than anything else in the format, right?
Huge. Yeah. So, and the reason that you get to do that is because of the amazing undercosted removal that you're playing.
Yeah. The removal is super undercosted.
The Chain of the Rocks is like,
Chain of the Rocks.
It's
is
the biggest
the tempo,
draw
right?
of this deck is yeah. to be able to play four Chain of the Rocks because you can play, it's one mana, so you can do so many other things on your turn and play that.
Yeah.
Like, turn four, you could have a Seeker out, attack with Seeker, or like, before you attack, you play Chain of the Rocks and Hoarding Outburst, and you get two pumps on the Seeker. Like, that's not unreasonable.
Or, you know, you have the... It lets you play, like, your Seeker of the Way, the board can stall, and then you can do things like, you know, Lightning Strike, Chain to the Rocks, or you can cast two pieces of removal, like, on turn three. You can cast it all really, really early, and
on an empty board, you can just Lightning Strike them before damage, and it basically does four damage, because the extra one from Seeker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is so cool. In the right spot, that's what you want to do if you got like a bunch of burn in your hand or something. So why don't you keep going up the curve here?
So up the curve, we have Hoarding Outburst, which is an awesome card. I mentioned before, it triggers the powers from Seeker of the Way.
Yep. When I first saw this card, it was so unassuming. Like, I never thought it was going to be that good, but it's such an auto include in tons of decks now.
It really is. It's three power for three mana, which
isn't
too bad. It's not Anafenza.
No.
Anafenza puts out a lot more.
Like
Goblin Outmaster.
Big Nux is bigger. Yeah.
The thing that I find overwhelming about Hoarding Outburst is because you're playing so much removal, frequently what your opponent will do is when they see that you've played a turn two Seeker, they'll use a piece of removal on that Seeker of the Way because they know you're holding on to a handful of removal, and if they play a threat, you'll blow it up and swing through with lifelink, and they don't want that to happen. A similar situation can occur, except for, of course, later on,
mm-hmm.
where you will play your Hoarding Outburst, and there are only a few pieces of removal that can deal with all the tokens at once.
Like Bioblight and like Arc Lightning out of the sideboard. Like, people don't main deck Arc Lightning.
No, they don't. Well,
Crux of Fate and like End Hostilities are the other ones. But
you're going to worry about
like Hero's Downfall right. doesn't end. If you play Hoarding Outburst and have Hero's Downfall, they just look down at their hand and cry.
Like, yeah, they look at it and they're like, I'm going to eat some goblins for a bunch of turns.
Yeah, they're going to do damage.
Which is awesome. And considering that their option would be to play a blocker, and you have so much good removal, yeah, you can remove that blocker
and get through attacking with the guys. Yeah. So anyway, solid 3 drops and 2 drops in the deck.
So now we're going to move on to our later game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Ashcloud, two of Ashcloud Phoenix, and this card is pretty awesome.
It has its
weak moments.
It has its matchups. Like, when they play Rabblemaster, you're not happy when you have an Ashcloud.
No, Phoenix. You're really, really sad.
It trades with a token. But you do get to leave back the guy that trades with their Rabblemaster.
I feel like with the Ashcloud Phoenix, it's best played when you and your opponent have both used all your removal and all your threats to completely blow everything up, and yep, it's just an empty board, and you play this Ashcloud Phoenix.
And they look down, and they have Hero's Downfall in their hand, and you have 6 mana on your side, and they go, well, yeah, if I kill this, you just flip it up and attack me, so I'm going to be eating damage from it. And it's very good in that spot.
I've had some really sad moments where my opponent turned forward a Seed Rhino, and I turned forward an Ash Cloud, and I wasn't ahead, and I was dead.
Yep, yeah. Like,
it doesn't block it.
It's not big.
It's
got 1 toughness for a 4-drop.
Yeah.
But it's a resilient threat, which is very good against controlling type decks.
And 4 power flying
For 4 mana is pretty good.
It's a lot.
Like, that does a lot of damage really quickly. If they just have, like, Siege Rhinos on the ground and you're ahead, you can get through pretty easily. So, it's good. It comes out in certain matchups, but it's very good. So
I believe we actually mentioned already pretty much our thoughts on the Oppo Siege and Chandra.
Yeah.
They're for card advantage. They're really, really relevant. They're great in most matches.
Yep.
You know, an aggro match, the Chandra is really good because that
it can plus kill ability creatures.
Kills a lot. And, you know, if you're playing an aggro match, they're going to want to be attacking Chandra or dying or losing their creatures, which is a big deal, right?
Yeah, and then you get to prevent them from hitting you, and your life total stays higher. It does, and the +1 for them to not block is also another way to get, like, a Seeker through. So if they have a Siege Rhino on the field and you have a Seeker of the way, you can play Chandra, it triggers Prowess, and you can +1 to deal damage to them and make their Siege Rhino not block, and you still get in for 3.
Yeah, which is a great way when your opponent is really low on life, and you're just like, come on, let's top deck a burn.
Yeah, and they can swing back and not kill the Chandra.
Yeah.
Which is cool, and the next turn you can use it to get another card. So it's very, very good.
And Oppo Siege, on the other hand, is really awkward for your opponent to answer. It doesn't die from combat damage. Yeah.
Like, they can attack Chandra. If you have no board, it doesn't protect itself.
Yeah, and also,
they can't really attack an Oppo Siege, which is just nice. That's the draw of that card over Chandra.
And the enchantment is hard to hit with a piece of removal.
Yeah. I mean, you can win the game with Chandra's ultimate and just find a Stoke of the Flames and do 12 damage.
It's really fun.
It's really fun doing that. Or getting, like, I've whiffed before. Well, not whiffed, but, like, just got a Hordling Outburst, and I cast it 3 times and got 9 tokens. It's kind of fun.
It's a whiff.
And then they Bile Blight, and then you die.
Did
no, I didn't. Oh, okay. I just won. I think I played Sorin in that deck, too, and I had Sorin on the field. And it's, attack for 18, lifelink. But anyway.
So next, let's look at our one of Perforce, God of the Forge.
This guy's spicy. I love him in this deck.
This is a weird card for this deck because it's really hard to turn on his devotion.
You just never, ever get it off.
We've got a lot of removal, so there's not all that many creatures that get it. We've got Seeker of the Way, which is white. Hordling Outburst is just tokens, so there's no devotion from it. So it's really, really hard to
get it. The only time you're getting it is if you have Ashcloud and a dragon, and by that time you're winning anyways.
Yeah.
I've been playing this deck for a while, and I put Purphoros in it a long time ago, and I tried to really abuse it. Like, I played Mardu Scout when it first came out. That card was awful, but it had double devotion, so I thought maybe it was worth it. And you can dash it in to trigger the 2 damage over and over again. It just wasn't worth it. But the first time that I played Hordling Outburst, when I had Purphoros on the field, I felt like a god. It's like, play this, do 6 damage to you, and have 3 tokens. For 3 mana, that was really good.
Yeah, that is overwhelming.
It does get sideboarded out a lot.
And as well, I should say that with Goblin Rabblemaster, when you play Goblin Rabblemaster, Perforos just does 4 damage, you know?
And, like, at the end of the game, like, an installed board state, Rabblemaster is not very good, normally, because the token gets in and they block it.
Yeah.
But it's a repeatable shock over and
with
over again
Perforos,
with Perforos out.
Yeah, it gets really good.
Yeah. I really, and you can pump your guys as well with Perforos.
Combos, you know, oh yeah, the pump is really relevant. It also combos with Ash Cloud.
Oh, it does, because it actually leaves play and enters.
Yeah.
Oh, because it dies and returns to the battlefield, so it enters the battlefield.
And yeah, that pump ability is super, super relevant.
Yep, I really like it. It does have, like, and it's really good against, like, a control deck.
It's really tough to deal with.
And you just play a creature, and worst of all, like, I mean, as long as it resolves, you get 2 damage in. So it does stuff. It does get sided out in a lot, like, against aggressive decks, so you just don't want it.
So on the higher side of our curve, we have a 2 of Stormbreath Dragon and a 1 of Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker. And I think we should look at these 3 cards all together because they're
Sarkhan, very similar. Sarkhan is a 3rd Stormbreath Dragon.
He's a 3rd Stormbreath Dragon that's a little different and doesn't die to like Wrath effect.
Yeah, it dies to different answers.
Which
is why we wanted it.
Yeah, he's a big deal. And you also get the bonus of his...
you get to Flame Slash something if you're behind.
Yeah. And his ultimate ability can be good.
Yeah, usually you just won by that point.
Yeah, usually you've won. You've done
because your early stuff does so much damage. Usually Dragon is just dealing the last, you know, 4 to 6 points of damage. And then, especially or just getting you in range of burn spells.
When the board is all stalled out, you know, and you cast your Stormbreath Dragon with haste. And the flying is...
You want it to be like the last couple of cards that you play, really. And then...
Then we have Wingmate Rock.
Which combos well with Perforos.
Yeah, also combos well with Perforos. And Wingmate Rock is not something that you'll commonly see in a list like this.
No, usually they play 4 Dragon and Sarkhan.
A combination of Dragon and Sarkhan.
Yeah.
But this creature is really, really powerful. It's, you know, situationally worse than Stormbreath Dragon, situationally better than Stormbreath
Dragon. Yeah, like, it doesn't hit right away, which is rough
quite
on
a big
it,
deal.
But it requires 2 answers. Kind of like Hordling Outburst, you can't kill it with 1 removal spell unless it's a Wrath effect.
Yes.
Like, you can't kill it with the Bioblade or Arc Lightning like you could with Hordling Outburst. Like, it's tough to deal with both tokens.
And the life gain is super
rapid. Yeah, it lets you race at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Like, you can attack with all your Hordling Outburst tokens and gain a bunch of life. So it's good there. And I want to talk about Crackling Doom a little bit, too.
Yep.
This card is the reason, the only card, like, we have 1 card in the sideboard that has a little black, but this is the only black card. And I've played this deck for a while, and I found that it just didn't have enough hard answers to stuff. This deck is really tough beating a Stormbreath Dragon because your Chain to the Rocks can't kill it.
Yeah, your Chain to the Rocks
can't. You have 3 Stoke the Flames. That's all you can have to kill it.
And Stoke the Flames, as awesome as it is, it's high costed for a piece of removal. Yeah. Like,
we didn't mention that you could use the Hordling Outburst tokens with Stoke the Flames.
That is.
Or like a Rabble Master token that's going to die. You can tap it before it attacks. Stuff like that. But anyway.
That's why Crackling Doom was made the splash, because this is just an absolutely awesome card.
I don't think I've ever not killed the card I wanted to kill.
Well, I mean, like, worst case, it's just a 3 mana shock.
Yeah.
Your opponent's at 2 life. Yeah. Like, it's really relevant.
Oh, man, I gotta tell you this play I did with Crackling Doom one time. So, my opponent he's playing green-red monsters, so he has Sarkhan on the field. And I've got 5 mana open, and I've got Crackling Doom and Lightning Strike in hand as my last 2 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a bunch of mana open. So he activates Sarkhan, and he goes attack you with Sarkhan. And I play Crackling Doom, make you sack your Sarkhan. It's like the only answer I have to Sarkhan. And then he's like flashing Boonsader, and I Lightning Strike the Boonsader. So it felt really good. It was only, it was a 2-for-2, but it was the best kind.
Well, you took 2 damage off of it.
Yeah, it's like you take 2 damage, your Sarkhan and your Boonsader dies, and it felt really, really good doing that.
And also I should mention that without the Crackling Doom, when you're relying exclusively on Chain of the Rocks to deal with, like, the fat green threats, and your opponent is like, ooh, I don't like those Chain of the Rocks happening, and starts to board
Destructive Revelry, stuff like that,
It can be really, really nasty.
Like, if they can instant speed get a Perforos back to block, it's a blowout.
It's nasty, and the Crackling Doom helps mitigate that. And you can also, even side out you have those answers, you can side out some of these.
If they're bringing in a bunch of Revelries and stuff. Also, Chain of the Rocks it does need a mountain. Sometimes it is tough to cast. We made the mana base so that there is a lot of mountains. But, I mean, sometimes you draw it and you don't have a mountain and you can't do anything about it. And you feel really sad if you're staring at a couple of them in your hand and then you die.
Mm-hmm.
It does happen. It's a downside to the card. it's got insane upside, but it does have downside.
Yes.
Yep. So
go ahead. I want to mention that we do have the three Surf of the Flame, Surf of Flames and Lightning Strike, and these are powerful cards because they're dealing damage to an opponent,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like Lightning Strike, it's fairly low-costed. And
it's really good at getting like a Fleece Mane out of the way on turn two so you can attack with Seeker.
It's really good at killing the low-cost threats. What I find with Stoke the Flame is that it costs two mana more. It does have the Convoke, which helps mitigate it, and it only does one more damage to a creature or player, right?
Yeah.
So compared to other things that we have in the deck, this is a really awkward answer to...
like a Rabble Master or something.
Yeah, this is a really awkward
answer. You gotta do what you gotta do sometimes, but it's not ideal.
I find myself frequently holding on to them because...
As the last removal spell, right?
As the last removal spell. And they are pretty broad, but the upside... Is you get to stoke people in the face
when they're at four. Yeah.
You really get to. You're going. When you have Stoke the Flames in hand and you're racing your opponent, you're going to win that race.
Like, what really impresses me about this deck is that it has so much reach in the late game.
Yeah.
I remember I was playing you. This was a few weeks ago when I first started playing this deck, and you were playing Sadisi Whip. And you. I had stalled out. I had nothing on the board, and you finally got a whip down, and you had a graveyard full of stuff, and I was going to die. And I went, Stoke the Flames, Lightning Strike, you're dead. You were at 10, and I'm like, you're dead. And it felt really good, and you weren't happy about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this deck can do damage out of nowhere, which is...
It reminds me
of the Jeskai decks at the beginning of the format, where they could just kill you out of nowhere, and this does that. And it feels really good when you get to do that. Yeah, anything else about the main deck?
Nope.
I just want to mention we have 24 land and 36 non-land.
Yes.
Just as a thing, like 24 is the number that we found works the best. There's a couple mana confluence in there, you know, a bunch of pain land. How many tapped lands? We're only playing six tapped lands, I think.
I think
we settled on six. It was like got four temples and two Nomad Outposts,
four temples, two Nomad Outposts.
So it's a very consistent mana base.
We're pretty low on the Painland, I believe.
It's a very consistent mana base, which is really nice. The Black Splash is really easy. Two Mana Confluence, four Bloodstained Mire, and a couple Nomad Outposts. There you go.
One Swamp.
And one Swamp for the Bloodstained Mire, yeah.
Oh, we might have a Black Painland in there somewhere.
Yeah, like the Caves of Coilus.
There's a Caves. There's at least one Cave.
I don't remember exactly how we built it, but it's a very good mana base, very consistent. So let's move on to the sideboard here. So I'm just going to say the cards really fast, and we'll talk about them. We've got two Glare of Heresy, another Chandra Pyromaster, a one of Sorin Solemn Visitor, three Hushwing Griff, two Arc Lightning, two Valorous Stance, two Banishing Light, and two Elspeth Sun's Champion. Let's talk about the Glare of Heresy. What matchups do you want these in?
They're such a broad card.
There's probably the best. Maybe Valorous Stance now is the best sideboard card in Standard. I don't know.
Glare of Heresy. Thoughtseize is a thing.
Glare of Heresy is one of the best sideboard only cards.
Okay.
Like, you can main deck Thoughtseize in every deck that you play it.
Okay.
You can main deck. Yeah. Anyways, Glare of Heresy, insanely good. What matchup do you want it in? Like Abzan?
Abzan, you're totally going to bring it in against
Abzan.
Two
mana answer the Siege Rhino.
It answers most of the Planeswalkers, most of the threats. It's just fantastic. You're also probably going to want to bring it in against like a Jeskai deck, so you can hit the...
like Monastery Mentor.
You can hit the Monastery Mentor. You can
Bermaz.
Maybe. You can hit Bermaz. You can also hit their Jeskai Ascendancy.
Yep, yeah, that's true.
They're probably going to be playing Seeker you can hit. You can also hit the Mantis Rider. You can hit a huge amount of
things. Yeah, so it's two mana, and it exiles.
Yeah. You're probably not going to want it against the Mardu stuff.
No, but what's great about it over something like Suspension Field, the Suspension Field stays in play, and they can screw around with it, where Glare of Heresy just knocks it off, goes to the graveyard, they can't deal with it.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Well, I guess if the Mardu, if you saw some targets, like, I guess they do Butcher play some Horde. Walkers and Butcher.
If they're heavier in white.
Yeah. It also hits the Chain of the Rocks, if that's...
Or Banishing Lights. Banishing Lights, stuff like that, which is a downside of those other cards, where this one gets upside. Another Chandra. So good against Control.
Good against Control. Good against some fast stuff.
Card advantage.
Yeah. Broad card.
Yeah, we've already talked about it. So, Sorin.
So we only have the one of Sorin, and you know, we're not very deep in black. He's great against control.
He's not insane, but, I mean, you can make a vampire make another vampire.
Well, in my opinion, like, the way that I like him in control is that, assuming he resolves, it's going to take two pieces of removal to deal with him.
Yeah, because you're always just making a vampire and then plussing from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's good with the outburst tokens, too.
He's fantastic with the outburst tokens.
Yeah, he's just good.
A racy match, he's fantastic.
Yeah, like, if there's, like, it's not seen play as much anymore, but, like, the Bernie Jeskai deck,
yeah,
very good against that deck.
Yeah.
Three Hushwing Griff, what do you like about?
Awesome card.
Whip and Abzan, right?
It's pretty much for Whip and Abzan, and it shuts down the Whip deck really, really hard.
Oh, yeah. It's like Doomwake Giant, Eidolon of Blossoms, if you're playing that, Sidisi. It just makes Seder Wayfinder. It makes them all not trigger, and very good against that deck.
What I find in the Abzan deck is the real, let's look at like an Abzan aggro or a mid-range deck,
right,
rather than the Whip Abzan decks, where the only ETB effect that's stopping is Wingmate Rock, and it also stops our Wingmate Rock, and also Siege Rhino. But the thing that pushes that card over the edge for me is that those matchups tend to stall the board, and a 2-1 flyer is going to be really relevant with the flash.
Yeah, exactly. It stops Siege Rhino, which is big.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of the times, I like siding this in against blue-black control because it's a threat that is at instant speed. So, like, they can tap out to play,
Crux.
Yeah, play Crux of Fate, and then you flash this in end of turn, and then you're hitting them for two again right away.
And then also play Storm Breath and hit them for six.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. See, that's, like, a really, really powerful thing.
It's a nasty play.
Yeah. It's good all around. I really like it. It's got its matchups for sure. So we have a 2 of Arc Lightning for tokens, aggressive decks. That
tokens,
kind of
aggressive decks. It's really nasty when they play it against us.
Yeah. It feels good when, like, if someone plays Rabble Master and you, like, when you're tapped out,
yeah,
it kills the Rabble Master and the token, which not a lot of cards
great.
Do.
And it's also a 3-drop, 3-burn spell to the face
which is
totally
thing.
Acceptable.
Yep.
It's not great, but it's
no
it's
lightning
acceptable. Yeah.
But it has the upside of being able to kill, like, 2 or 3 creatures.
Yeah, it does.
So we have 2 Valorous Stance.
It feels really nice to nab 3 Elvish Mystics.
Totally. Or 3 Rattleclaw Mystics.
Yeah, 3 Rattleclaw Mystics. Why not dream big?
Yeah. So Valorous Stance.
Awesome card.
Love this card. This is the new one from Fates where you can give something indestructible or destroy target creature with toughness 4 or greater. So you can kill Coursers, you can kill Siege Rhinos and Offenses. This thing kills a lot of stuff and protects your guys from their removal.
Yeah.
Like, the tempo you get from that is insane.
This card shines for me in a control E deck.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. Like, I would absolutely bring it in against, like, a Teemer Big Stuff deck or, like, just
a green
Stuff deck.
We wanted to, like, bring main deck this card, but we just couldn't find a spot. The competition's so fierce for this kind of card.
Against the control, it's so amazing to have Wrath Prevention and have spot
removal
in the same
card. Think about this. Like, you go turn 2 Seeker, turn 3 Rabble Master, hit them for 1, and then they untap, they pass the turn back, you go to combat, and they say, hold on, I'm going to downfall your Rabble Master, use all their mana, and you say, hold on, Valorous Stance, make it not die, and now you're swinging with Seeker, Rabble Master, and 2 tokens.
And that's huge.
And that's pretty much game over.
Yeah.
Like, because your burn spells and your other stuff's going to finish the game out, even if they Wrath from there.
Yeah.
You're just going to win that game. That tempo shot is huge. I've got 2 of Vanishing Light. Just all
broad card you're bringing in against things that your other removal can answer.
Yep.
Or if you
like
need more removal. Yeah.
And it's good against the Whip decks.
Or Planeswalkers also.
Yeah, Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
You nabbed my Ugin before and I was really sad about that. I didn't have a way to kill it. But yeah, so I mean it's very good.
Very broad.
Very broad, hits lots of stuff. Good against those like green devotion-y decks too.
Yeah.
Because they don't usually have ways to deal with it.
Yeah, when it nabs the big things.
Yeah, because you can just let them ramp, and then they play Ugin, and then you just banish it.
Yep.
Yeah. Elspeth, we got 2 of those.
Good card, big card.
It's very expensive.
It is very expensive.
We've been bringing it in against control, but sometimes it's just like it's so expensive that it's tough, but it's another big threat that they have to deal with, which is nice.
It's also good, I find, in mid-range matches where not a lot happens.
Slow, grindy, board stall type games.
It helps you go over top them by just, you know, using whatever ability she has.
Yep, very good. It's sweet with Purphoros, too. Do 6 damage
every turn. Oh, God, it's disgusting with Purphoros.
Disgusting, yeah. Make 3 tokens, do 6
damage.
That's game over. Yeah, it's really fun. So, yeah, that is the, I guess, Mardu Tempo deck.
Mardu Tempo.
We finally have a name for it. So, anything else you want to say about the deck?
Nope.
Really sweet. I think this deck's going to win at least once.
I hope so.
I really think it's very strong. Okay, so here we are. We're going to be talking about our Sultai Control deck. So I'm just going to read out the deck list, and then we're going to go over it. So starting off, we've got 2 Thoughtseize in the main board, 2 Bioblight, 2 Murderous Cut, and 4 Heroes Downfall. It's kind of the removal package. We also have 1 Sultai Charm, and then we have 2 Crux of Fate. So those are the removal packages that we've got in the deck. And we've got 2 Disdainful Stroke as the only counter magic in the whole deck. So it's not, we're not playing Dissolve or anything like that. And we're playing 3 Divination, a Treasure Cruise, and 2 Dig Through Times for the card draw. And then there's 4 Satyr Wayfinder, 4 Courser of Crucifix, and 2 Silumgar the Drifting Death as the creatures. And then we're playing Ashiok, 2 Kioras, a Garruk, and an Ugin as the Planeswalker suite. So let's back up and let's talk about what the deck wants to do. So what have you found with this deck so far?
Well, it ideally it wants to 1-for-1 your opponent without losing too much life and then cast a draw spell to go ahead, play your Planeswalker, have, you know, a lot of those Planeswalkers are pretty hard to deal with. So, you know, when you cast them, they tend to just get value. Unless, of course, your opponent just immediately downfalls it.
Which happens, but, you know.
It does happen, but, you know, you can make the draw advantage, get some of the counter magic, which is more so going to be out of the board.
Yeah. So what I found with the deck is, for me, like when I play a control deck, I like to have lots of threats in my control deck. So, like, in this one, like, we're playing, like, 2 Silumgar, an Ashiok, 2 Kiora, a Garruk, and an Ugin. Like, that's a lot of, you know, big threats in this kind of... And they come down early. Like, Ashiok's turn 3. Mm-hmm. If you play Ashiok turn 3 and that board is clear and you get to untap, you are in a good spot to win that game.
Especially because your hand is probably just removal.
Removal and card draw, yeah.
And unless your opponent has, you know, like a spell answer for that, then it's going to be really difficult for them to kill it.
Totally. Like, this deck is based on, like, a blue-black control deck, but the green gives you so much.
The green gives you quite a bit.
I want to talk about Satyr Wayfinder for a bit. Now, you're the one that suggested that we throw this in this deck. Why don't you talk about the impact it has on it?
Well, the thing that Satyr Wayfinder reminds me of is the abuse that Thought Scour has in
like the Delver decks.
In the Delver decks that no longer exist.
Because Treasure Cruise is gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get to draw a card after you've cast the Thought Scour, right? And you get to fill your graveyard with stuff, which really helps activate the delve mechanics.
Yeah.
And we have a couple delve outlets in this deck. Like, there's the Murderous Cut, the Dig Through Time, and the Treasure Cruise.
Yes.
And, you know, we're nowhere near as abusing the delve mechanic as much as that deck was, but the Satyr Wayfinder does a lot in that.
It really, really
it
does.
It dumps stuff into your graveyard, and it cycles into a land, so you get that land into your hand.
Yep.
And as well, you get a chump blocker, which when you're trying to, like, turn 2 a Satyr Wayfinder, and then, like, turn 3 your Ashiok,
you have
it gives you
blocker.
A chump blocker,
yeah,
which makes a big deal.
The one thing that's rough on Ashiok is it doesn't protect itself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have like a couple 1/1s laying around, they're pretty much more valuable in your graveyard than they are on the field.
Yeah.
Like, they're not doing anything. You're not killing your opponent by hitting them 20 times with a Satyr Wayfinder. That's not what you're doing.
Yeah, and then once you prevent some damage with the Satyr Wayfinder, well, that Satyr Wayfinder goes in the graveyard and there's more delve stuff.
Yeah. And, like, there's been multiple times where I've used Dig Through Time on, like, turn 4 easily.
Yeah. Oh, very easily.
Or, like, Treasure Cruise on, like, turn 3 or 4. Like, that's a thing.
Well, even for, like, one mana. And, the Seder Wayfinder can really help you cast Seder Wayfinder and then, like, maybe turn 4 cast Kiora with a... with the Murderous Cut up for one mana.
And you can be a little bit greedy on keeping, like, a 2-land hand or something. Like, a Scry land... a basic and a Seder Wayfinder is not an awful hand because, like, 95% of the time, you're going to draw land off that Wayfinder, and then you're going to get to Divination, which is the next card I want to talk about in the deck. It has been insanely good.
Yeah, it's very, very good. It's very low-costed. Despite the abusability with the Delve, like, we only have the 3 Delve draw spells.
Yeah.
And if they don't get... You know, if there's no combo happening with the Seder Wayfinder, or if you haven't emptied your hand of removal, then can kind of get hung up.
Yeah, like, if you start a game with a Dig Through Time and a Treasure Cruise, it's basically like you mulled the 5.
Yeah.
If you don't have the Wayfinder. Whereas Divination, you can keep, like, 3-land hand. Like, this deck, you really want to hit your land drops. And, like, the Divination gets you to the Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise. And it also keeps you drawing into your lands, which is a huge thing in the deck. Because what you really don't want to do is get stuck on 3 lands and then have, like, a Dig Through Time in your hand because you're never going to be able to
get it. That's going to be a game over.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you have Divination, you draw into more land and you're fueling Delve. And it's been really good because I've played blue-black control, like straight blue-black control, and I always found that there was a weak link between the early game and the late game. Like, you really needed that mid draw spell to get you there. So we're only playing 2 Disdainful Stroke as counter magic in this deck. Why don't you talk about why we're doing that?
Well, the big reason that we found with the counter magic is that when you're on the draw and your opponent plays a threat, they're going to tend to be able to resolve one threat before you have your counters up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a nightmare of things that your opponent can do to you when you don't have the spot removal. They can make you counter things and then save other parts of mana that they have open to resolve the threat that they want to resolve.
Yeah.
You know, they can bait the counter spell with instant speed things and then cast the threat that they actually want to resolve.
Right.
So having the spot removal over the counter magic is a fairly large advantage.
I'm a big fan. Yeah.
However, having said that, the Disdainful Stroke it shuts down planeswalkers without getting that activation. It's very, very broad, and you know, that's why it's in the deck.
And one weakness to this deck, it's really hard to remove enchantments. It doesn't have any exile effects. Like, in white, you get Banishing Light and stuff like that. You don't get that kind of effect here. Outer
End is a pretty nice control card.
Yeah, exactly. You don't get that kind of thing here. We're playing 1 Saltite Charm in the main deck, which is really good. It gets rid of the artifacts and enchantments that you can't deal with. It's also just a removal spell, which is really nice. And it also lets you draw 2 discards. So it's kind of like cycling couple. But I really like that card because... If you're playing against, in red, they have, what is it, Outpost Siege?
Yeah.
Where it's Chandra Pyromaster 0 ability over and over again. You're going to lose to that card because they're getting card advantage. If you don't, Saltite Charm's a 1-of in the deck, where it's nice to have the Disdainful Stroke to deal with that kind of threat that your spot removal can't deal with. So you can use your spot removal and wait until they play a threat that you can't deal with spot removal and then counter it. Or Thoughtseize is really nice there, too, because you can get the things that you can't deal with and let them have the threats that you can answer.
Yeah, and with the spot removal is very nice because there is occasionally the situation where you want to let your opponent attack you, that let that damage resolve, and then see what they're going to do until their end of turn to make sure that they don't try and resolve, like, you know, an Elspeth or something that's going to be a really significant thing that you don't necessarily have the answer for. And then you can hold up your counter magic, and then end of turn, when they can't do that anymore, you can use a spot removal on the threat that's currently on the table.
Totally. Like, the one thing that's not good about only having 2 counter spells is it's tough to protect your win condition.
It is tough to protect your win condition, but the Thoughtseize also helps protecting your win condition.
The point is that we have lots of win conditions.
Yeah.
Like, if you're only playing, like, 1 Ugin, and that's your win condition, you can't not play counter spells, because you need to protect it.
Yeah.
Where, like, in this deck, you can go like Ashiok into Kiora into Garruk into Ugin, and they have to deal with all those threats.
The other thing is our draw spells get into the things that can help set up your planeswalkers.
Yeah, and let's talk about Silumgar. It's the new blue-black dragon from Cons. It's the flying hexproof 3/7. When you attack, it shrinks their team by one. What do you think about this card in the deck?
Well, it's got some cool interactions. Like, obviously, that ability is going to be sometimes relevant.
Yeah, it's against, not going to be against tokens or whatever.
It's going to be a big deal. Against the mono red deck, the card is probably slow.
It's probably just sideboard this out for Drowned Sorrow.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But definitely, it's going to hit like tokens. It's going to hit like Elvish Mystic, which is a big deal.
Yeah, like in the late game when they have just a bunch of things sitting around doing nothing, you can just take a couple of them out.
Also, it blocks everything. The hexproof ability is super nasty to deal with. Mm-hmm. But the thing that just puts it over the edge for me is that you can have Silumgar cast Kratz of Fates, destroy everything except for obviously not dragons.
Yeah, and leave the dragon behind. Yeah.
So you get to keep your threat on the board. Yeah.
And, I mean, it is really slow when you try to kill someone with a Silumgar. Like, I compare this to Prognostic Sphinx. In the same kind of slot, the 3/5 you attack, you get to scry 3. So I think scrying 3 is definitely better than giving their guys -1/-1 because it just sets up all of your draws.
You can
find the
answers
you need. But being able to wrath and keep this guy is a huge thing, which is really nice. So I really like that interaction. Maybe we want more Crux of Fate in the deck. That could be a thing. Like, it kills our Coursers and our Satyrs, but usually you're probably fine with that.
Yep.
Coursers a little bit awkward in the deck. It's the only thing that requires double green, so we had to move the mana base to really get Courser in here. But it gives you so much incremental advantage throughout the game that it's totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And it blocks early threats as well.
The life gain can be really,
the
really
The life
relevant,
gain's really nice.
Especially when you're behind.
A lot of these blue-black control decks play, like, Radiant Fountain and Dismal Backwater to gain life. We couldn't really do that because we played Courser and it really stretches the mana base.
Well, and, you know, because we're stretching the mana base like that, we are playing a bunch of the temples, which really...
They are nice in the deck.
They help manipulate the top deck of your library.
They really do. And Courser's so good with the fetch lands and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really think this deck is sweet. You have so many ways to win. You can just play Kiora... and sit, or you can just play Ashiok turn 3 and sit on it, get their dudes and kill them. And that tends to soak up a lot of life because they have to spend resources to kill it. And then Kiora, it can just win on its own really quickly.
Yeah, that ultimate is really close.
And Kiora's really good because it forces your opponent to keep dumping things on the table to try to get through it, and then you just wrath and kill all their dudes.
Yeah.
And that's really nice to be able to do. And then Garruk and Ugin are just huge, and they're going to win you the game. So I really, really like this deck. I love having the divinations in it, which is a bit different than normal lists that we've been seeing. I like the Sultai Charm. Maybe we want more in the main deck. It's that good.
It's a very broad card.
It is.
That cycle ability is really, really relevant on it as well.
Yeah. If you have, like, in the late game, you just, like, cycle this and then discard, like, a land or whatever. And draw a couple spells, like, that could be huge.
That's fantastic.
It's just so nice with all the different things you can do with it.
Or, you know, you can dump a Satyr Wayfinder when he's no longer relevant.
Yeah, totally. So let's look at the sideboard here. So we've got two more Sultai Charm in the sideboard. For if people are playing, like, Banishing Lights and stuff like that that are dealing with your Planeswalkers, this is a really good way to get those out at a very low risk. Like, playing something like a race is kind of risky, because if they only have, like, a few cards that are enchantments, it's kind of not worth it bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, you can just kill their creatures with it. Or, like, it's got three modes. It's so good that it can do all those things.
Very, very broad.
So then we've got two Negate as well in the sideboard. And we have also a Disdainful Stroke, so three more counter spells. So when do you want to bring these in, Josh?
Well, it's going to be against a deck that you know is slow, and then a deck that you know that's going to stretch your hero's downfalls farther with planeswalkers. Also, the negates are quite good if your opponent is going to perpetually have the risk of top decking a Stoke the Flames and killing you, which is, you know, it sucks, and you have to be able to interact with that.
And I like it against, like, the Abzan decks that are playing a lot of Planeswalkers. It's good against, like, the red decks that play a lot of burn spells. It's nice to be able to deal with those. And something that we've been talking a lot about recently with counterspells is they're so much better on the play than they are on the draw.
They really are.
So I've been siding out. Like, we started this deck with a lot more counterspells in the main deck. We played some negates and more disdainful strokes, I think, in the main deck. And they were just awful on the draw every single time. We were just, if this was a removal spell, it'd be so much better.
It's because when you're on the back foot, right?
Yeah. So, like, if you go turn one, tap land, and then they, or they're first, so they play turn one, pass it to you, you play a scry land, you scry whatever. And then they turn two, they play Seeker of the Way. And then on your turn two, you play a tapped land again. And then they play a Rabble Master. And then you play, and then you untap and you play Hero's Downfall. They still have another guy. And then they get to keep perpetually playing dudes while you have to answer them, and you're always on the back foot. So they're so much better on the play, because you can get ahead and stay ahead with them.
And, like, back when we had Supreme Verdict, I feel like that strategy was a little bit more viable, because there's a really big difference between having a 4-mana Wrath and a 5-mana Wrath.
And conditional Wrath.
And it is like conditional Wrath. And the fact that it can't be countered. Like, Supreme Verdict was an automatic 4 of in the deck.
Oh, yeah.
And the Azorius controlled X of Theros Standard would be running largely counter spells and minimal spot removal.
Yes. Just because they could get away with it because they had that insanely good sweeper.
Yeah.
So moving on, we've got one Chasm Skulker in the sideboard. Now this might be a little cute. Maybe this is better off just being like a Prognostic Sphinx or something. Really, really like it against another control deck as a way to get through damage. It seems sweet when you play Treasure Cruise and you get three counters on it. It's also very good on defense. If you're playing against, you know, like, you can get it out, get a couple counters on it, they kill it, you get a couple more chump blockers type thing. It's a little cute. I don't know how much I'm going to be bringing it in, but I really like this card. I wanted to main deck it, but there just wasn't room. Do you have anything to say on Chasm Skulker?
It's a good card. It's good to bring in against a deck that you know it's going to beat, because
it's another
can be annoying
card
to interact with. It can shut off, like, tokens from Rabble Master.
Yep, yep. Like, if you get one, if you, like, play it down and then they play Rabble Master, you take the one from the token, you draw a card, it's got a counter on it now, and it can block the Rabble Master or the token.
Yeah,
and forever, and it just gets bigger and bigger.
And it trades well, and you can cast Crux of Fate while you have it on board.
Yeah,
and
just
and
get then, a billion chump blockers.
Yeah, you get a billion.
Or you can just attack with
pieces
him
to interact with, right?
It's a good card. I really like it. So we've got two more Bile Blight in the sideboard against aggressive decks, tokeny decks. It's just the best removal spell you want, pretty much. Like when people are playing Hordling Outburst and Rabble Master, you want Bile Blight.
Yeah. It's nice low cost removal.
Yeah, it is.
Not even bad on the bigger things if you want to block it with something.
Yeah, like there was a game that we just played when we were testing, and you had a Stormbreath Dragon, and I wanted to not have my Planeswalker die, so I shrunk the dragon to keep my Planeswalker alive so I could get a bit more value out of it. And you can do that kind of thing. It's not great, but...
And, you know, it can even get better when, you know, I'm attacking into you with... attacking in a Courser with, like, a 4-4, and then you shrink it and block with the Courser, and
for
it
sure
dies.
Yep. And then we've got a 3 of Drowned in Zoro. So this is really good, again, against the aggressive strategies.
Anything fast, anything tokeny, anything that you think is going to have low toughness. I find, like, the Gruul decks, which are running things like Boon Seder. Well, not only like, you know, the Mystics and the Eldritch Mystic, or the Mystics and that bear that taps for mana.
Yeah, Rattleclaw Mystic, the two.
Oh, sorry, Rattleclaw.
Yeah, and then Elvish Mystic
as
Mystics. Well.
Oh, okay.
The Mystics,
Mystics.
And also Boon Seder. Yeah.
So it can hit a lot. And also Goblin Rabble Master, he's a you know, a 3-drop, and he's a huge threat, and he can kill you really fast. However, he does only have 2 toughness.
And
so
this cleans up all the tokens.
It cleans up all the tokens.
And you get to scry.
Yeah.
It's a really good option. That's why there's 3 of. It's just so good in the deck that, against the matchup you want it in. Then we've got one more Thoughtseize. What matchups do you want this in?
Anything that's slow, it's obviously not as
like
good.
Like the mid-rangey Abzan, or against control, this card's really good.
Anything that you know that your opponent's going to want to hold on to cards, because Thoughtseize, it's super undercosted, but it really sucks when your opponent doesn't have any cards in his hand.
Like an aggressive deck where they dump everything on the field. Or if you're Thoughtseizing them to take a Lightning Strike, that doesn't usually feel very good.
Yeah, that doesn't feel very good.
You save one damage.
Well, you know, unless you're keeping that Lightning Strike off Kiora.
Yeah, that's true. Which is kind of annoying that she dies to Lightning Strike
when you
play it. But
she's really good for only a 4 drop Planeswalker.
And then we've got a 1 of Archfiend of Depravity. Now, you're really high on this card, so I want you to explain
why you want it
in the sideboard and what matchups and stuff.
I feel like there's a lot of decks that are going to be running, like, you know, the Mystics, Courser, Kyriatid, things like this.
And sorry, just before you keep going, this is a new card. So it's the one where at the beginning of each opponent's end step, that player chooses up to 2 creatures they control and then sacks everything else. It's a 5/4 flyer for 5 from Fates. So sorry, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure because it's a new card.
So there's a lot of these creatures that are extremely powerful and really good. And if you don't have the resources while you're playing a control deck, you're not necessarily going to want to kill them. You're going to want to save your resources to blow up the thing that puts you on a 4-turn clock.
Yeah, like Courser is really, really good against you.
Yeah.
But it's not something you want to use removal on. And it gets under your Disdainful Stroke.
Well, sometimes you want to.
Yeah.
And yeah, it does get under the Disdainful Stroke. But when you drop Archfiend, it tends to be your opponent will have their 2 threats that are good things, and then they have to sacrifice. You know, you're going to bring it in against those green-based decks, or maybe even a token deck would also probably work well, too.
It's a bit of a five cost thing is kind of high for the token.
It is kind of high for a token deck.
It depends, but yeah.
But, yeah, when you get your opponent to sacrifice all of their rampers, they can frequently be mana screwed just from that. And if not, you cut off a huge amount of threats and then just use your spot removal to deal with their their threats that haven't been sacrificed.
And it's also just a 5/4 flyer for 5.
Yeah.
Like a beach space.
Yeah, it's a really big threat.
Fast.
Unfortunately, it does die to Soak the Flames.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it dies to removal.
Well.
I mean, it's still good, so... So, and another thing too is like, if you're playing against like an Abzan deck or something like that, and they're playing Downfalls, I guess they are going to have things to hit like Planeswalkers, but like their Abzan charms and stuff like that, like they're going to be hanging around in their hand and they might want to be using them.
They might just be used as draw. Abzan charm is a pretty broad card.
Yeah, but they might just have like removal spells sitting in their hand and this is a target.
Yeah, this is a target.
Where there's not as many targets in this deck as against a normal creature deck, but. And then the last 2 cards, we have 1 Liliana Vess and 1 Nissa Worldwaker. So Lily and Nissa are both very good against, like in the mirror, against a control deck.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
Both what you want.
Lily's absolutely awesome. Her biggest issue is that she doesn't actually protect herself from onboard threats.
Yeah.
But she protects herself from threats that are in your opponent's hand. And she just actually locks your opponent down.
Yeah, she's very, very good.
It's really powerful. With Nissa, you're going to tend to not want to go turn 5 Nissa.
Yeah.
Because you want your land to stick around, right?
You want to be hitting land drops.
You want your land drops.
You don't want them dying.
And your digs.
Yeah. She is very good in the right matchup, though. And Liliana is very good against, like, the slow Abzan decks, too. Because as long as you can nab a card or two, it's usually pretty good. And it's another threat, too. They got to kill it, or you're going to get everything they just discarded and put them all in the field with the ultimate. So I like the sideboard. It's dynamic. It's got lots of different – I like how it has different answers and different threats for the matchup that you're playing. It's good to have those different things you can do. So do you want to say anything else about the deck?
Nope.
No, I think we covered it pretty well. I'm going to be playing it at FNM tonight on Friday, and then on Saturday we're both going to have a hand at this deck probably, unless something comes up last minute we want to switch, depending on the metagame. But 90% sure we're playing this deck this weekend. So
yep.
All right, so those were the 2 decks that we're going to be playing this weekend at game day. Which one do you think is better?
Well, you know, it depends on the matchups, but yeah. I'm really leaning towards the Boros, the Mardu Tempo deck.
Yeah, me too. I think it's better. And it's better in the matchup against each other, too.
Because
we're going to be playing each other at some point.
I'm sure we'll see.
We've played each other in the finals of Game Day for, like, the last four Game Days.
I don't think there has been a Game Day where we haven't been.
We usually just clean up at them.
There's a reason that we've taken
every single time. Yeah, because we always knock each other out.
Yeah.
Like, every single... The reason why we both don't win is because we knock each other out of the tournament. We clean up at these things. but yeah, so we're really looking forward to game day. It's going to be great fun. We're going to keep track of the matchups we go against. Any interesting things that come up, we're going to, you know, record them so that we can talk about them on the next podcast.
Yep.
This was a fun episode. So if you guys, thanks for listening. If you guys have any questions, want us to talk about anything, you can hit us up at thefnmroundup@gmail.com. And we're going to post the link and stuff like that in the bottom underneath the show. So anything else you want to say?
No.
Sweet. Good. So that's it for today. See you guys next week.